you may have seen, is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Find out more at queencitypodcastnetwork.com.
Actors, right? The road to fame and celebrity. All right, I get it. You've had an incredible life.
Aren't you sick of hearing about them?
Me too.
The only problem is, I'm one of them. Except I'm not famous. Oh, you've probably seen me. A bunch of times. I'm the guy with the information about the hero's dad. I'm the doctor that can't figure out what's wrong with one of the main characters. I'm the guy they just punched in the face during the interrogation. My name's Brian LaFontaine, and I'm a professional actor. Oh, and it's not just me. There's a ton of us.
We're the ones you don't hear about.
Yeah, we're the names that scroll by at lightning speed during the end credits, but there's way more of us than there are of them. We're important too, dammit, because without us, they can't tell the rest of the story. So this is for all the movie and TV prostitutes, homeless people, drug dealers, cab drivers, cops numbers 2, 3, and sometimes 4, the pilots, the waitresses, and girl at party.
This is You May Have Seen.
Oh no, we're here again. Back again, another interview. So much to learn, so much to absorb. Like, don't slap Tom Cruise on the ass when you meet him. That's not the way to go. I learned so much from these interviews. Jason Warner Smith taught me that in this interview. I still have so much to figure out and remember. So for anybody out there who's hoping to meet Tom Cruise, don't slap him on the ass when you first meet him. It's no way to say hi.
Welcome back. Thanks for listening. Yes, Jason Warner Smith. This is going to be fun. Such a great guy. We talk about The Walking Dead. We talk about Rectify. We talk about Tom Cruise a little bit in that whole experience on American Made. And so many other things. This guy's awesome. So sit back and enjoy. Here we go.
Okay. Yeah, he was kind of like down a little bit.
All right,
yeah.
So you missed, we thought, honestly, because right after the show closed is when COVID hit. And what he had was pretty severe. So in hindsight, we were wondering, like, did Mark have, did he have, yeah, is he patient zero?
It
was diagnosed as the flu, but man, his symptoms were pretty damn severe.
We've known each other for years, but we've always known each other from a distance. Mm-hmm. Because he's lived up there,
right?
I've lived down here in Atlanta, and we were introduced through a mutual friend, a guy named Jeff Sliney. Mm-hmm. And so we would hang out at Sundance together. I saw him once or twice when Jeff and I lived in Los Angeles in the early 90s, and I'd been up to Charlotte a couple of times, you know, and then that was like the third time to come up to see your play. And we were there, we saw the play, we went back to our Airbnb and drove home the next day. So
Jason Smith, right off the top,
yes.
Where may we have seen you?
Well, if you're, I'm going to fix my light here.
Fix your light.
There we go, a little better. If you're a fan of The Walking Dead, mm-hmm. that's probably the most notorious or notoriety-wise. What's the word there? Somewhere.
Notable?
Thing that I have been a member of. I was also on a very well, critically acclaimed, however very poorly seen show called Rectify that was on Sundance TV for a while.
And right.
Was on. It's funny. This is, you know, I teach classes and acting classes in Atlanta as well, and I try, my goal is to never be that teacher that just says, well, this one time when I was working with Tom Cruise and one of those teachers that wastes an hour of time before anything happens, just right. talking about themselves.
Right.
But when it's like, well, wait a minute, this war story will actually help these people. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I was telling a story about Rectify and the audition process and that sort of thing. And all of my, you know, I have some students that have been with me for 3 years, some that have just started. And they're like, oh, yeah. Where can I see that again? I'm like, well, it's leaving it's leaving Netflix, you know, next Thursday.
Oh, man.
They're like, oh, rats. And I said, yeah, it's okay. It was only on there for like only 5 years. So you really didn't have time. I was being a real passive aggressive, you know, douchebag. But I was like... But it's on AMC Plus now if you want to pay for that. But because nobody would, it came out in 2013, 14, mm-hmm. 15, 16, the four seasons, and it was on Sundance. And most people don't even know that Sundance exists.
Right.
They had cable. I think I have that channel. It was low def, but that was the other thing. Might have seen me in a movie called American Made, speaking of Tom Cruise. Mm-hmm. I worked a whole lot, but I'm not in the movie very much.
Okay.
And then there's a movie called Birth of a Nation, which I'm pretty proud of. Not the one from 1913, the one that was made about 4 years ago. It's about the slave rebellion in Virginia in 1830-something or another,
okay.
the Nat Turner story.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very proud of that. So those are like the big projects. I was in the remake of Footloose, if you saw that.
Right. I mean, don't, you know, please know, I've got your whole list of credits here. I'm giving you the chance to
But talk about those are like the most, you know, I was on an episode of NCIS New Orleans, but other, yeah. I mean, you know,
right.
I was on a couple episodes of The Vampire Diaries. These are the like the popular things that I've
sure.
been a part of.
Exactly.
So, but other than that, unless you come to see theater in Atlanta 20 years ago, you probably haven't seen me.
theater.
Yes.
I miss her so.
Yes, well, that's why I tell people, you know, I get interviewed, you know, from time to time. They're like, you know, if you had to choose between theater and camera, I'm like, theater all day.
Right.
All day. Because it's like, you've been on set. You yeah. know what it's like.
Yeah.
It's not fun. I mean, there's fun elements. Right. Yeah. I mean, like, for instance,
right.
on American Made, I'm flying an actual fucking airplane.
I Whoa.
Mean, there's a pilot next to me, but we're shooting a movie in the air. And we're staying in fancy hotels and going to South America. Yeah, that's fun.
Wow.
Yeah, the acting part, not really fun, you know?
Right.
The waiting around.
Right.
And take 17, and it's just like, ugh, you know?
Right.
And then it's over.
Yes.
You don't get to do it again tomorrow night. It's
exactly.
Done.
No, the stuff that we have to endure or deal with, or I don't want to say put up with because I don't want to make it sound negative, that it's just, it's part of the business.
Nobody's going to listen to us complain about being on camera. Yeah.
No. Exactly. And I, just like you're saying, it's not a complaint. It's the reality of it that I think a lot of people who aren't in the business, especially, yeah. you know, when we're not the celebrities, you don't really think about. So just, yeah, real quick. We're talking with Jason Warner Smith. And you may have seen him, as he said, as Gavin on The Walking Dead. I recurred on that show for quite a while. I'm sure you had a fantastic death. We can talk about that. Queen America with Catherine Zeta-Jones. Rectify, as you were saying, you played Wendell Jenks recurring on that show. I got a story about Rectify.
Oh.
Heartbreaker. Outer Banks, Vampire Diaries, NCIS New Orleans, Christine, American Made, I Saw the Light. Footloose, 99 Homes, Being Mary Jane, Anchorman 2, 42, a host of others. And because the show is called, the podcast is called You May Have Seen, dude, you've got some good You May Have Seen roles on here. Jason has played various characters, including school policeman number 2, delivery guy, EMT, teacher, Mater D, guy with knife in head.
That's my favorite.
VA receptionist, investor, and coroner Charlie. I mean, because for me, there's a whole reason why I started this, because, you know, guys like you and I who've been in this forever, who are career actors, who aren't
yeah.
household names or even recognizable faces in most living rooms.
You're that guy. Oh, yeah.
Right. We have to point it yeah. out. You know, it's because people don't usually stop and ask, like, who was the delivery guy? Who was that guy with the knife in his head? They don't ask about that. They don't think about it. And I mean, you know, I get it. It makes sense. But, you know, you're here in the trenches with me, and this is your interview. So, I mean, talk to me about the significance still of those roles, even though they are their occupations, for lack of a better term.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, never been asked that question. Well done. But let me think. Significance. Well, I mean, for instance, the significance of one you didn't in Footloose, Officer Herb,
mm-hmm.
that was the first time I had ever worked more than one day on a set.
Really?
And it ended up some funny stories that go with that, because I'd never had a multi-day booking before. And so they actually brought in an outside casting person. Julie Schubert came in from New York and did the casting for that. It was not handled through local casting, which was unique.
Mm-hmm.
And I got the call. Is that true? I don't remember. I just remember going to a callback God, it's so long ago. It was 2010.
Yeah.
I just remember going to a callback at an, you know, a temporary place where they always are,
Right.
and meeting this woman named Julie. Yeah, no. I went. My initial call was with Julie Schubert. Yeah, I went some. You know, I went into the place and I did my call, and she's like, "Yes, now we've got an officer, Herb." She was very happy. You know, I was like, "Okay, cool." She's like, "Well, you know, we'll get back to you." And I got a call back and came in, and there was her and Craig Brewer, the director. There were some other people there who I don't remember who they were, producers and whatnot. And I did the call back and got redirected, and you know, asking me questions and how about we do it this way? And I was like, okay. And you know, and I ended up booking the role. So I went and you know, they said we're not going to need you till like the end of October, and then you'll shoot a day, and then you'll be off for a week or two, which I didn't know what a drop ad was at the time.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, and so then we'll bring you back, and you'll shoot a month later to do this scene at the drive-in, and yada yada. I'm like, okay. And then all of a sudden, I get a call like, "Hey, we need you next week." Oh, okay, great. We're gonna add a scene in the principal's office. Yada yada. So I came in and shot that, and then was off for 4 weeks, and then I was gonna be off for 6 weeks. So they had to do a drop ad, and so they had to pay me for that 4 weeks or the 6 weeks. You know how that works. But I had never heard of this, and I did my first shoot, and then I went to New Mexico with my friends Jeff Sliney, who introduced me to Scrappy. And got back home, and there's like another check in my mailbox. I'm like, wow, this is great. I got a check, but I didn't work this week. So I called my agent, like, "Hey, man, Kathy, I just got another check." She goes, "Oh, honey, you're on a drop ad. You're going to get one of those every week. Now don't leave town." I'm like, what? You know? So that was a huge, steep learning curve on that thing. And I was scared being there. Ray McKinnon, who created Rectify, was also on the show, so and I knew him, so that kind of helped to have him there to kind of like, "Come here, let me show you how to do this, kid." And the one of the hair and makeup guys really took me under his arm and was like, "Look, you need to quit being so shy. You need to be more gregarious, and you know, if you got jokes, tell them, because people like to work with fun people. They don't want to work with the guy that sits in the corner going, 'Is it my turn yet?' You know." And I was treating the whole thing like I was a guest. And he goes, "No, you're not a guest. You're part of the team." And Ray was, and so I learned all of that. And even though it was a small role, which nobody really remembers me from, or even if they saw the movie, it was a learning experience for me. Huge.
That's really, really interesting that that's how that experience was for you. First of all, I have never, I've known of the drop ad, never had the experience of it personally.
Well, I hope you do, because it's a nice way to make money.
Right? No, I have friends who have had it. I've seen it happen to other people. And it's interesting that you had the experience where you had somebody say, no, you're part of the team. You need to, yeah, stop being so, because stop being so shy, stop being so quiet, because I feel, and I've talked to other actors who it's it kind of feel the same way, that it's like when you know, when you show up every time as the new guy, that it's just like, you know what, I'm just going to be over here with my cup of coffee and you let me know when you need me. And you're saying that there are people out there who are going, no, you don't have to do right. Talk to me about it.
There's,
Split the
you got to
difference.
read the room. You got to read the room. I
Okay.
mean, you don't go up and slap Tom Cruise in the ass, go, "What's up, buddy?" You know, no, you know, you know, it's, it, there's, you have, you got to read the room. But yeah, I mean, you need, and Ray McKinnon also, when I got hired on Rectify, which was the first time I'd worked multiple episodes of a TV series. And I remember I came back from my, was it the first day? I don't remember if it was my first day or second day on set. And I have to, you know, I was nervous. I was nervous. I was like, "Holy crap, this is really happening." Okay. And you know, they don't tell you like, "Oh, by the way, you'll be in 6 episodes." They just say, "You're in this episode." And at the end of it, I'm like, "Dude, what, can I cut my hair?" "Oh, well, we'll probably have you back." That's all they say. They don't know, because they're kind of making it up as they go. There's no like, yeah, I had no guarantee. But the deal was, that's when you learn that, well, if you're going to do something drastic, you need to call your agent and say, "Would you check with casting and see what they're thinking?" And you know, that kind of thing. "I've got another job. Am I going to be busy?" And they, you know, they got first position, that kind of deal. And Ray sat, I remember I was sitting in the hall of the set, this fake prison set. I'm just sitting there. And then like leaned up against the wall, and Ray comes up, leans up, slides down, sits next to me, and he kind of turns to me, and he's like, "Hey, buddy." That's, he called everybody buddy. He's like, "Hey, buddy, how you doing?" I'm like, I'm good, you know, I'm just kind of, you know." He goes, "Hey, you're here, okay? You're supposed to be here. You're a part of this. We're all in this here together. You're in, okay?" because he could see that I was still a little shaky.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, you got it? I'm like, yeah, thanks, man. You know, and it just needed something like that because I was definitely feeling like an outsider still. And it is tough because, yeah, when you're the FNG, you come in and everybody knows everybody and they're all telling their jokes about yesterday on the set and all that.
Right.
And, you know, you come in, you do your day and you're gone. And then you're not used to being like coming back. And so I hope for all young, old, whatever, but, you know, actors getting into this business, sure. eventually they'll get that experience so that they can learn that it's okay to be a part of the team. And there's always going to be somebody on the team that you don't. Never wants to talk to you, and that kind of, you know, like any group of people.
Right.
But, yeah, that was that, you know, that, and that had not happened until Footloose when I got that talking to. Even though I got paid for 5 weeks of work, I really only worked 3 days.
Right.
Somebody made a mistake. I mean, honestly, they did. I don't think they meant to pay me for, you know, 3 days of screen time, and it was somebody probably got fired on that one, so I don't know.
Well,
but I was very—I mean, I won the lottery. It was a pure luck thing,
right? Hey, there's a scheduling person. There's a person that makes up the calendar and how it's supposed to go. And hey, they decided that this is the way that it needs to go. So you need to.
Yeah, so I don't know if it was a mistake or like the director said, "Hey, let's get the officer guy in here. It'd be fun to have him in the scene." And somebody went, fine, and didn't say, well, that's going to cost us $15,000. Is that cool?
Right.
Somebody forgot to have that conversation.
Man. Now, I did notice, because you've got it set up really, really well. For someone who, just based on what you're saying there, because you've got a really impressive body of work, and if Footloose is, you know, kind of your first big hit, that wasn't, like you said, until 2010. And, you know, not to give away your age or anything, but you're not new to this. So if that was the thing that kind of set the fire to you, you've gone crazy since then. And so where I'm going with this is, you put together a nice way to market yourself, your website, your videos, your YouTube page, and all that stuff, which is really easily accessible. And it really, you know, showcases you in a great, great way. So it gave me an opportunity to go, what is this one? What is this one? What is this one? And so I got to see one of the Footloose clips. And it was interesting because it was like, it was almost identical to what the original was like. And it
which
was
is what he wanted.
And I was like, that can't be an accident. That's not coincidence. They're trying to recreate that whole flick with the driver's license across the
chair. That was part of the audition. He goes, and it's, we're going to do it in 3 shot. He said that at the callback, he goes, I looked at the original. It's 3 shots. I want to match that and do it exactly as it was done, except we won't have the cassette tape part, but it's the flick and it's the camera and we'll have this angle. I want to give an homage to the original. He said that's what he wanted.
Was there any added pressure to be like, oh, I got to nail this way?
No, I mean, luckily that was like my last day, almost last, I think it was my last day.
Okay.
My big scene was my last scene. So I'd had some practice and I gotten to know everybody.
Yeah.
And I'd learned a lot from Craig and how he worked. Mm-hmm. And so I wasn't as nervous, but there was just, it was one of those kind of prop nightmares where you're dealing with a lot of things, like for instance that police car. I don't know what it is about movie cars, but they always have something wrong with them. And so the police car, it's like it had the siren and the lights and stuff, which we were using practical on the lights, and the guy that's running the car goes, look, as soon as you turn that car off, turn off the lights because the battery's dead and it's running off the alternator, and we won't be able to crank it again. So I'm like thinking like, okay, I gotta pull in and I got to pull up, hit this mark. I'm not a stunt driver.
Right.
Then I got to turn off the lights, turn off the car, get out, take off my sunglasses, put them in my pocket, get my clipboard, get my pen. You know, and it's like, and all this has to match.
Right.
Then I have to say lines and act.
Right.
And so that was the most nerve-wracking part. But no, yeah, they made it great. Actually, that was my last day of filming. Yeah. So by that point, I was kind of settled into the character.
Right.
And I'd been practicing those lines for a month and a half. So, and it wasn't like working with Doug Liman where they rewrite the scene every night. The script stayed the same. And plus we were trying to match, but yeah, I mean, that pressure was mostly on the camera crew, the cinematographer who I forgot who it was now, but the cinematographer and the AD and the director figuring out matching it.
Sure.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. And then you had, Rectify was after Footloose.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what a great, great opportunity, because you did, God, how many episodes of that show did you do?
I think it ended up, if you, you know, technically I was in 8 episodes. So I was in 5 of the first 6, and then I was in 3 of the second season. But I mean, some episodes, I mean, I'm in it for like,
right.
That,
right.
You know,
but right.
I still counts as an episode.
It's interesting. I know it goes back to the beginning of our conversation, but, I do wonder, like, why the hell hasn't the Sundance Channel been more successful or more notable with, you know, coming from who started it, you know?
Right. Well, it's part of the AMC family, whatever that, you know.
Gotcha.
And so it was this close to being on AMC.
Okay.
And I'm just, you know, if it had been on AMC, my career could have been different. Mm-hmm. The show probably would have won Emmys and Golden Globes.
Right.
And Screen Actor Guild Awards, because it should have won all of those awards, or at least been nominated for them, because of the amazing writing, the amazing cinematography, the sound, and the main cast, not my part, but the main cast was stellar.
Yeah.
And it was like William Faulkner was writing the script every night. It was just insanely good. And it just, part of that whole awards thing is it's not just so much about quality, it's about people seeing it.
Right.
And no one was seeing that show. And so it just got, won a Peabody Award, you know, one of those things.
Okay. Right.
But I'm sorry, I've lost track of what we were talking about.
We were just talking about that whole experience of Rectify, and we were talking about the Sundance Channel, and it's like,
yeah, I don't know what, you know, Sundance, they just, that was their very first fully owned, fully scripted from 0 to 100 show.
Yeah.
They had other shows like Top of the Lake. They had bought that and put it on Sundance, but they didn't produce it and create it. Rectify was their first one, mm-hmm. and it just didn't, you know, it didn't work for that network. And that network's basically like become, I don't know, it's like just shows reruns all the time now. There's nothing really going on there.
So interesting. No, I remember auditioning for the show a couple times because I don't really fit that world that it was set in, you know. I always enjoyed reading for it the few times when it would come across. And then finally, there was one that came out of nowhere. Honestly, I didn't even know that they were still making the show. And it was like, hey, here's an audition for Rectify. And it was for this doctor who was this, you know, neurosurgeon. Oh. And it was a recurring role, and I booked it. And oh, Jason, don't get ahead.
Hold on.
Don't get ahead of me. Don't get ahead of me.
Okay. I booked it.
I booked it. And I was like, oh my God, you got to be kidding me. Because at the same time, I was working on Turn up in Virginia. Remember that show?
Ah.
Yeah. I had my...
I read for that about 1,000 times.
And
go
I'm
ahead.
Shocked that you didn't get booked on that. And I had a recurring role on there as another doctor. He was the town doctor of like the first season. So it was similar. It was where, you know, I go into an episode and then I'm thinking it's over. And then they go, okay, we need Brian to come back. So that particular winter when we were shooting that crazy snowstorm came through the Southeast.
Yeah.
And I was supposed to finish the Turn episode that I was working on and then basically go right to, was it Wilmington?
Griffin.
Was it?
Griffin, Georgia.
Griffin, Georgia, to do Rectify. I'm up in Virginia and I'm in the hotel and then I get a call from, you know, like the second AD from Rectify, and he's like, hey man, because of the weather changing, we wanted to see if you could be here tomorrow.
Ugh.
And I was like, I'm working on another show right now. And he was like, yeah, sorry, man. And that was it. I was like, no, because I knew, I was like, I'm never going to get a chance to read for the show again. I know. I mean, there was so few and far between, and I was so excited because I loved the writing so much and I did love the cast, and I was going to get a chance to work with, now I'm going to blank on her name, and I absolutely love her, the young lady who was the,
Abigail Spencer.
Abigail Spencer. Yeah, my scenes were going to be with her, and I was like, "Oh, she's awesome," and you can't wait. You know, looking forward to that. And so, you know, another part of what we deal with, another part of what we go through.
You know,
we work so hard.
I was actually in season 2. I was like leaving the house, in my house in Sandy Springs at the time, mm-hmm. to drive to Griffin for a rehearsal for my big, one of my big scenes in season 2. And I got to the end of my neighborhood, and it was like, that's when everybody got stuck on the roads in Georgia.
Oh, yes.
And I called the second AD and I said, dude, I can't. He goes, yeah, turn around, go home. Because if I had gone another 100 yards, mm-hmm. I'd have been stuck on the interstate. And it took me like 30 minutes to go a mile and a half to get home.
Right.
Like, okay.
And
we ended up shooting it. I just never got a rehearsal. But yeah.
I have a story about that snowstorm. I was actually in Atlanta shooting Vampire Diaries when the snowstorm started. And I was fortunate that my scenes were all at the beginning of the day. It was a morning shoot and the forecast was coming in. And I mean, I'm from Rhode Island. So I know snow, and I know snow in the Southeast.
Yeah. Nobody else knows snow in the Southeast. You got to be careful.
Yep. And
you don't know how to drive in that shit.
And I was like, oh my God. I was like, if I don't get out of here by a certain time, I'm going to be stuck here. And I knew it. Yeah. I knew it. And Jason, like, they wrapped me before lunch and I flew to get out. Like, I was racing the snowstorm. And by the time I got back to Charlotte, every news report was about how Atlanta had come to a complete, you know, Walking Dead zombie.
We got caught with our pants down big time.
And I could awful. Not believe it. I was like, oh my God, I was right on the money. I was within that 3.5 hour drive. I was like, man, the entire world went upside down because of one snowstorm. That was crazy. Yeah,
that was.
So, okay.
I'm sorry you didn't get to be on Rectify, buddy.
Man.
Who ended up playing the part, you know?
I can't remember his name. Well, and it was interesting because the callback, it was just me and him.
Oh, wow.
It was me and the other dude. And he's a guy that he's got one of those faces. Honestly, I wish I still knew who he was because he'd be perfect for this podcast. I was like, I know you. I was like, I've seen you do all kinds of things. And honestly, it was one of those where I knew what I was doing. I felt really confident about it, but I was like, they're going to go with this guy because he's got a much bigger resume than I do. He's got more recognizable stuff. And then when I got the call, I was like, get the fuck out of here. Yeah. I was shocked.
Speaking of which, when's the last time after Rectify that you had a callback for a TV show?
Oh, I mean, I can count on, you know, a few fingers on one hand. It's been so...
I didn't even have a callback for Walking Dead. They booked me off tape.
Yeah.
Now, they've been watching my tapes for 6 years, so I think maybe they got to know me.
How many auditions did you have for Walking Dead before you finally got booked on it? Because I've heard these stories, too.
I don't know the exact number, but I auditioned for every season except season one. So 2, 3, really? 4, 5, 6, and then I booked it in 7. And the end of season 6, I mean, I must have auditioned 5 times in 2 weeks toward the end of season 6, because they would shoot from May until November. And so, like, that October, I was just like, audition a day. I'm glad I didn't get any of them because they were all like, you know, dead in 5 minutes kind of guys. Right. But a lot of what Scott Gimple would do is he would just say, yeah, put that in the good, this guy's, we want to hire this guy for something.
Right.
Put him in the good pile or her in the good pile.
Right.
And so then when season 7 was rolling around, they sent that part for Gavin and Jared, and Josh Michael and I both read for both parts and they cast us. I think they already knew what they were going to do. They just wanted to see us do it.
Right.
And so, but no callback, just, you know, you got it.
Talk to me about that then. How did that change things for you? How did that make just even your life different? Because I've never really watched the show because I don't fit into that world. I've had, again, maybe 3 or 4 auditions for the series the whole time it was on. So I'm not as familiar with it, but I know that it was a friggin', you know, huge, you know, cult hit that everybody knew about and waited on the edge of their seats for the new season to come around. So when you finally show up in a bunch of episodes as, you know, one of the new people to hate, how did that, did all of a sudden you get, you know, hey, you're this creepy bastard? No,
nope.
Nothing. No. Really?
I mean, not a lot.
Yeah.
When the show was airing and I was actively filming in 7 and 8, a little bit.
Yeah.
That I knew of. Now, there might have been times that people were like, I think that's the guy, you know, but they didn't say anything. But it was, you know, for about a year or two there, it'd be like once a month, somebody, like the bartender, might be like, yeah, dude, you the savior guy, the cantaloupe, you're the cantaloupe guy. You know, that was something every now and then.
Right.
And of course, the biggest thing that came out of that, I mean, of course, I could talk for an hour about this, but I'm not going to. I was able to get into the whole Comic-Con thing.
Wow.
And it's funny because a lot of, at that time, the cast of The Walking Dead was monstrous.
Yeah.
I mean, the series regulars were like 20 of them.
Wow.
And so a friend of mine is a guy in Atlanta that, you know, that's in our realm of actors, of middle ages, white dudes, guy named Randy Havens. I don't know if you've ever heard of him or met him. He was he's the science teacher on Stranger Things in season 1 and 2. That's what he's kind of famous for. The mustache and the glasses.
Yeah.
So Randy, you know, so Randy and I, Randy was actually in my class as one of my students for a while, even though we're contemporaries. I was just teaching him what I knew. And I think he says he liked it. So, he had a manager for that. So I said, "Hey, who do you use?" And I reached out to this woman and she's like, "Well, Jason, I just want to be honest with you. The cast is so big now and your part's not that big. And, you know, I'll take you on, but I can't guarantee that any of these people are going to want to see you." And it actually worked out pretty good. I ended up getting to go all over the country and to Canada and England. And,
oh my gosh.
And yeah. And, you know, and they're paying for all this and make a little money while you're at it. And so for about 2 years, that was a lot of fun.
Wow.
And then it all, you know, as soon as the cast, you know, I was dead, I was out.
Yeah.
And then new people come in. I was not popular enough for them to want to keep paying money to fly. Right. And she said, "It's probably not going to last very long." I'm like, "Okay, great. We'll have fun while it lasts." And so that was the coolest thing that came out of that. And just being a part of that fan base. And, you know, there's still people that, you know, follow me or I'm friends with. And we chat online about that kind of thing. I, in my egotistical, maniacal actor brain, assumed that now I would be able to secure, you know, representation in larger markets with, you know, the Gershes and the Greens and the UTAs of the world and all that.
Yeah.
Nope. So if I was 22 and hot, maybe, but not, not, you know, looking like this, you know, they're like, "That's real nice. There's a ton of people just like you that we already have on our roster. We don't need another one of you." Be, you know, happy that you're a bigger fish in a smaller market. So that was a bit of an ego blow, and it bothered me for a little while.
Sure. I'm sure that I'm guilty of it, and I know that a lot of other actors that I know have had similar discussions where you think, "What the hell do I have to do?
Yeah.
What do I have to do to try and, you know, move just to that even next half level, never mind the full step?"
Yeah, you know? I mean, give me the lowest hanging fruit in that of the good level stuff. Right. Put me back on the JV bench. I'm good with that, you know, but
right.
It's in a bigger school.
Exactly.
But it just, I just assumed, you know, that spring of 2018, 2017, when I was dying off The Walking Dead and, you know, quote unquote, my star was rising and all that, it just was not enough. It was not enough.
Again, that's a nice reality check for anybody listening that it's just like,
yeah, man. I mean, you know, and a lot of, I'm sure there, and this is going to sound egotistical, but I'm sure there's a lot of people in our scope of our group think I'm like super duper successful and blah, blah. I mean, I've had a good run, but then when that show ended, I mean, it got cold real fast.
Really?
And I, you know, I was auditioning, but not booking.
Wow.
And cause I think what had happened is, you know, and this is discussions with my agent, Alexander White. It's just like, you know, and I had a manager for a brief while out of LA for a while that didn't work out. It was an experiment that he was in a relationship. You know, we could have business together, and they're like, "No more co-stars, guest star, you know, recurring, series regulars only."
Right.
And so the analogy I make to my students is like, yeah, I came off the JV starting lineup and went to the varsity team, but now I'm on the bench.
Right.
And I'm competing against Sean Astin and, you know, famous people.
Yeah.
And, you know, like the part that Sean Astin played on Stranger Things, I read for that role.
So did I.
Yeah, there you go.
Yep.
So it's like that. So now you're like, you're going against the world and
right.
you're going against, and there's a great, you know who Gary Cole is?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So I was a great interview on Fresh Air with Terry Gross, with Gary Cole. Mm-hmm. And he talked about, he was a Chicago theater guy and he'd only been in like one TV show or one movie at some point. And he got an audition for a movie of the week with Ed Asner and Candace Bergen in the 80s.
Yep.
And he ends up booking the thing and he flies out to LA and he's the bad guy of the movie of the week, for, you know, and he does the whole thing and he learns a whole lot. He moves to LA and nothing happens for a year and a half. And he kind of slinks back to Chicago and then things finally started happening, obviously, for him. But the Terry's like, well, you know, how did you book that role? He goes, oh, the same way any guy like me at that point books a role. Six other guys turned it down. So it's like, you know, they couldn't get this. Well, fuck, we'll take the new guy, you know.
Yeah.
Hope he doesn't suck, you know.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So that's the luck part. That's the,
Yeah.
Being in the right place, doing a good job, and hoping it works out.
This industry, while it looks, and again, I know that you know this, while it looks very, very glamorous and, a good ego boost can also be, even the good things can be somewhat ego destroying or whatever.
Sure.
I mean, I have actually booked jobs where I get on set and the people are really, really nice. And they say, we booked you because you look like this guy. Not, man, you were really good. They're like, we like your last name. That's why your last name stuck with us. So we're like, let's book that guy. And you just go, what the fuck? Again, what do I have to do?
One.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yep.
Yeah, and I keep trying to get that across to my students. Like, look, you've got to have your shit together. You got to be good. Mm-hmm. That's just getting in the game.
Right.
And then after that, really, it's just totally out of your control.
So out of your control.
Totally.
So you do a lot of not nice things on television.
Yeah. I got resting serial killer face.
I was watching, as I was watching your stuff, I kept looking and I was like, he reminds me of somebody. And I wonder, I was like, he reminds me of somebody. Who the hell does he remind me of? And I wonder if you get this. You have kind of a Will Arnett / Barry Pepper thing going on.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah. I was like,
little young Bruce Dern.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I don't know if anybody had ever said that to you or if you're like, you know what? That doesn't really.
No, I get it.
Yeah. How do you I'm sure it's fun to do because if nothing else, you're going, I'm working. But like, dude, the guy that you played in Rectify, that dude was fucking crazy.
Yeah, he's messed up.
He's messed up. I didn't see The Walking Dead. I'm assuming that there is some dark stuff in there. NCIS, you're kicking women around.
Yeah.
How do you, just from an acting point, how do you find those places for yourself?
Well, and I get this question from time to time. Mm-hmm. It really... And maybe, people might be going, no, Jason, that's just you. But it's, there's darkness in all of us. I'm sure there's been plenty of times that if people could hear your thoughts, you'd be in prison. There's things that you think and there's things that you get angry and say, driving and things are hanging up. Things that happen and you're frustrated and you're just like, oh, motherfucker, and all this kind of stuff and these dark, dark things, they're in there. We're animals. We're animals like a lion or a bear or, anything or a snake. We've got this murderous instinct and the good news is that most of us keep that in check, but it's in there.
Right.
So you just got to allow that to come up. Mm-hmm. And now I'm a Strasbourg guy, so okay. I work a lot with sense memory and affective memory. So there's sometimes it looks like I'm just being god awful, but actually it's a wonderful experience for me. Even though it might be, if I told you the details, you'd be like, well, you're still kind of twisted, but you're having either, a combination of inner monologue, inner imagery, and letting fantasy go because you're not really hurting anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's allowing yourself to have these awful thoughts or things that give you a feeling or emotion that it, due to the circumstances in the script,
right,
make it appear evil or make it appear sick and twisted.
Sure.
And here, a good example, on Rectify, the best episode, one of the best episodes I ever got to do was at the beginning of season two. And I remember Scott Teams came up and he goes, dude, I've written a monologue for you. And we did a table read. It's the only time I got to do a table read for Rectify. because it just never timed out right. And it was like, you know, open. It was like the first episode of season two. We had a little party, and I got invited to all that. It was the only time I ever got to really do all that mm-hmm. with them. And we all sat in, you know, the square table and had the big read. And a couple of my friends were hired to come in and read and fill in the roles. And it's like good to see them. And there's the little girl that plays one of the daughters in the show. And when it got to my monologue, they made them take her outside because it was awful. But when I performed it, I mean, I'm supposed to be masturbating while I'm telling the guy about how I raped him in the shower. Okay?
Right.
I wasn't thinking about raping a dude in the shower. I was thinking about something great, you know, for me as a heterosexual male to be doing, mm-hmm. but I'm saying something else.
Right.
So that was it. I was thinking about it and having inner imagery and some sense memory around that, one, you know, a normal, legal,
right.
pleasurable mm-hmm. moment. So it looked evil, though.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's just great to hear your take and your perspective on it. So then my follow-up question is going to be this. Do you find that you have to shift things a little bit when you've got something that is so well written, like Rectify, that you're able, like, once you've got that thought in your head, you've got that image in your head, the words are so good that it's almost hard to fuck it up. It's almost idiot proof at that point.
Yeah, well, that's true too.
And then you've got other shows, and I'm not knocking the show, but say, like, type of thing where it's more formulaic.
Yeah.
The writing, with all due respect, is not as strong. It's not as original. And right. you still have to find that place where you're holding this woman at gunpoint and kicking her across the room.
Right. You have to let that, you know, it's fun to play bad guys. It's sure. fun to be that asshole. It's fun to let that anger that you have at the other driver in traffic that cut you off and let it loose and know that no one's going to get hurt. And know that they know you don't mean it.
Mm-hmm.
And know that when they say cut, it's like, great job. All right, that was good. All right, you know. And you get to let all that stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I don't know, that's just me, though. And I try to help my students to, you know, let the politeness, let the civility, and let all that stuff go and be that five-year-old with no filter.
Right.
That's, right. you know, and but then when it's cut, it, you know, I still got to, you know, sign all my forms and drive home.
Right.
Which five-year-olds can't really do very right. well. So, you know, that's how it works for me.
Yeah. So let me ask you then.
It's different for everybody.
Do you work on your auditions by driving in Atlanta traffic? Because, man, you got
enough memories. I don't need to. Yeah. I have enough memories. I just recently read for a really bad guy for a feature, and I may have the role. I don't know, because mm-hmm. they were supposed to start the beginning of this month, and now it's been pushed back a month, mm-hmm. and they haven't said yes or no. But it's like, you know, the bad guy of a thriller.
Oh, wow.
You know, it's got spiritual, I mean, it's got supernatural elements. The guy's 150 sure. years old, and he's gone from just trying to save his wife to turning into I'm going to rule the world, oh, you wow. know, kind of guy.
Yeah.
The first scene's very real, and the last scene that I auditioned with is like, you know, he's monologuing, you know.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and it's like, that was so much fun, you know. It's just fun.
That's awesome.
And just make it, you know, like, I am going to rule the world, you know. It's just fun to go there.
That's really, really cool. I mean, of course, I'm interested in that because I don't usually get a lot of those opportunities, you know. I'm wearing a suit a lot.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll give you this. If you think those are the kind of roles that you could do, here's my Rectify story is very similar, because I'd heard about the Wendell role because
mm-hmm.
I knew people that were auditioning for it. Abigail Spencer has the same story. She goes, I said, how'd you hear about this role? She goes, a friend of mine was reading for it.
Wow.
Anyway, so I'd heard about the Wendell role.
Yeah.
I wanted to read for it. And so I was with a different agency at the time, and I emailed or called my agent and said, hey, I want to read for this Wendell role, this really nasty fucker.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, oh, well, Jason, no, you're doctors, lawyers, young dads, cops. We don't really see you in those kind of roles. I'm like, well, I see me in that kind of role. Give me a crack at it.
Mm-hmm.
And they really were not going to send me the audition. And finally they relented. And this is, I'd never done a taped audition on my own.
Okay.
I'd been going to the studio, my agency used to do them for mm-hmm. us. This was kind of in that crossover
yep.
period.
Yep.
when all that was starting. So I got my Super 8, tape camera with a lamp, and it's just like, it's awful. The sound's awful. The picture's awful. I still have the audition, but it looks terrible. And I made a lot of wrong choices. I didn't quite understand the character, but I sent that tape in. They sent it in, and I had a call back the next day. And then that was on a Thursday. I had a call back on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. I went down there and met with Ray McKinnon, and he's like, look, all your choices in that audition are wrong. However, you chill my blood watching them. And there's a deadness in your eyes that I really like, we like your last name. We like the deadness in your eyes.
Yeah.
And so let's retape this so I can send it to network, because I can't send them this. This is awful. So we reshot the audition, mm-hmm. and he coached me for like an hour.
Oh my God.
To get it. I know, it was the greatest day of my life.
Yeah.
It was like the first day of July, something like that, in 2012, I guess. And so we spent an hour with him, the director, and a production assistant taping this thing. Mm-hmm. And it was this, it ended up, the scene that I auditioned ended up, we shot it, but it got cut from the final edit. So, Ray called me on Sunday and goes, network loves you, you're hired. So within 4 days, my agent was just kind of like, oh, okay, I guess you can play these kind of roles.
Yeah.
And so anyway, my advice would be, if you think you can play something and they won't give you the opportunity,
right,
get a hold of the script or see an episode of a show that you think I could do that.
Right.
Transcribe it, shoot a copy of yourself auditioning for it, send that to your agent and say, I can do this.
Yeah. That never occurred to me. Like, I'm starting to get, I know you've done a nice job of turning the tables and putting it on me. Well done. as I continue to age, I'm getting more of the quirkier, edgier stuff. And I mean, I've turned in some stuff where I'm like, fuck. I was like, I feel like this can hang with anybody. And I've come close. Like, I know that I've been in consideration. It hasn't actually, I haven't broken through yet, but, I'm getting more of those opportunities, not necessarily murdery, rapey killers, but again, guys that are just edgier, darker,
good,
less clean, less professional.
Yeah.
So,
but that's your wheelhouse. You're really good at playing those guys. Obviously, playing doctors and neurosurgeons and all that.
Right. Right. Politicians, all that stuff. Yeah.
And here's the other, here's the thing. See how close my eyes are together, and mm-hmm. yours are nice and spread apart, which makes you look friendlier and nicer. And mine are really close and deep underneath my brow.
Right.
And it makes me look creepier. I mean, it's just, that's just how my face is shaped.
Sure.
Probably one of the nicest, friendliest, grooviest, lovingest people on the planet.
Right.
But he's got that face, and people love to make him bad guys because mm-hmm. he looks shifty.
Chadwick Boseman.
Yeah.
You got the chance to work with him, though. It did.
That was I only spent one day with him. Yeah. Actually, I got to meet him another time, though.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, that day I booked that role on 42. That was through Jackie Birch. Got a call back for it and booked the role.
Yep.
And we drove out to the edge of Georgia. We might have been in Alabama, I can't remember, but they actually covered an entire paved road with red mud to make it look like a dirt road. I mean, it was a massive do for that set for that one day. And I was leaving hair and makeup, got in a van, and there's this young black man sitting next to me. And I'm like, hey, I'm Jason. He goes, I'm Chad. I'm like, hey, oh, okay, hey, yeah, nice to meet you. Because he's Jackie Robinson.
Yes, he is.
And he was just kind of in his zone. And I said, are they working you really hard? He goes, you have no idea, man. I'm just exhausted. I'm like, I imagine you're the star of the movie. So congrats, man. This is great. Good for you. I never met him, never heard of him.
Yeah.
But, we worked together that day. And also, I met Toby Huss that day. He was in the scene as well. Okay. He's blown up.
Yeah.
At a ripe old age.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. He's a genius actor. Didn't really get to talk to him much because he was kind of like in the last part of our scene. He kind of came and went. But fast forward a year and a half later, I was down in New Orleans working on 99 Homes.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy, Jeff Sliney, who introduced me to Scrabby, was, and Scrabby knows this guy, Mark Ricker. Okay, Mark Ricker is a production designer. And he was the production designer for Get On Up about James Brown.
Oh, James Brown, right.
And so Jeff came out from L.A. to hang out with me in New Orleans while I'm working on 99 Homes just to have fun. And he goes, hey, man, Ricker's up in Natchez, Mississippi, working on Get On Up. Let's go hang out with him. You got 3 days off. Let's go. And my wife, Lisa, was in town. We all loaded up in the car and drove up there to go see Ricker and watch him shoot this show. And I said, well, I hope I get to see Chadwick. I wonder if he'll remember me. So we get there. We go in this big gymnasium where they're shooting. We're talking to Mark and all that, Mark Ricker. And there's Chadwick. He's all done up as James Brown. He's practicing all his dance moves, doing all this stuff. And I went over and I said, fuck it, I'm going to go talk to him. You know, I'm like, Chadwick, Chadwick. And he finally turns and looks at me and says, I'm Jason. I played the gas station guy. And he's, oh, hey, man. And he was James Brown the whole time he was talking to me. That's just how he operated.
That's pretty cool.
And I said, it's good to see you, man. This is fantastic. Good for you. This is lovely. And he said, yeah, thanks a lot, man. Thanks a lot, man. All right, it's good catching up. And he had to get back to it. But I was like, I'm glad I took that moment.
Right.
Because then, yeah, that, what, 2, 3, 4 months ago, and I was like, dead? What the fuck?
Right.
And it just, I mean, I didn't cry, but I almost did. I mean, it just broke my heart.
I was wondering, I was like, I wonder if that, because I know that there were several years in between, but I was like, I wonder if he looks at that now in a slightly different way. That meeting, that connection. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there was an awkward, funny moment too. The day we were shooting 42, and this is so, I told Lisa this the other day, because I was pulling a banana apart to put it in a smoothie or whatever. And I said, oh my God, I just remembered that moment. I had seen some sort of documentary about chimps or apes or whatever, and they always showed them opening the banana from the bottom.
Oh,
not from the handle part, right, that we always do. They open from the bottom. And so it's me, it's Chadwick, and it's me and like 20 black guys. That's the cast.
Mm-hmm.
And here's, you know, racist gas station guy.
Right.
And I'm just like, we're all chatting, having a good old time. And I said, and we're playing with bananas, and this other guy's got one. He's having a hard time getting it open. I said, turn it over and do it from the bottom. That's how chimps all do it. I saw it on the thing, and it's like, I look up, and they're all just looking at me. I look over at Chadwick, and he's like, damn, dude. Like, I said, no, I mean, it's that, fuck y'all. Fuck it, fuck all y'all. And they're laughing their asses off, and I'm just thinking like, oh, that came out so wrong. And they were just like, damn, dude, really?
We will not be expanding your role.
But it was like, you know, we were on a, they were turning the camera around or whatever. It was just like, I'm turning red now, of thinking course. About it. I turned red then. I was just like, never mind.
Oh, you my know. God.
They knew it was a mistake, but it right. was just like, it wasn't a mistake. They just knew it was just like the timing was evil.
Right.
It was just like,
right. Oh, my God. That's nuts. That is nuts. I want to ask you about one more celebrity bigwig, just okay. because it's like, what? Yeah. And because the moment that you did was so brief, but working with Adam McKay on Anchorman 2, because your moment is isolated.
Yeah. So you ever get one of those one-liner auditions and you're like, what do I do with this damn thing?
Sure.
Yeah. And so my audition for that movie was, my line was, you're damn straight. That was my line. It says, guy sitting in a lawn chair, watching TV, drinking a beer, looks at the TV and says, you're damn straight. That's the audition.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, this could be anything. So I got my poor suffering non-actor civilian wife is my taping partner most of the time.
Sure, sure.
And so I said, all right, here's the deal. Get the camera and I'm just going to go around the house and we're going to do this over and over and over and over. I'm going to have a gun. I'm going to change clothes. I'm going to put a hat on. I'm going to do all this. I'm just going to do, and we did like 10 different versions of, you're damn straight. You're damn straight. You're damn straight. You know, all this stuff.
Wow.
And then I just strung them together into one tape of just one bap, 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 bap. And like outdoors, inside, in the car, just all this stuff, and just strung them all together. And I was like, fuck it. You know, I don't know if it was Tracy Kilpatrick or who was casting that. I can't remember now.
Yeah.
Anyway, sent it in. And they cast me, and it wasn't that part. It ended up being Man with Knife and Head,
right.
which was like 3 or 4 different parts because it's a montage.
Yep.
So I'm like, hey, I'm Man with Knife and Head. So I get on set, and they strap this thing as a contraption on my head with this Bowie knife sticking out. Right. I got a jersey that says 13 on it. You know, it's all these little inside jokes. Right. And I was in a hospital waiting room watching TV. Anyway, but yeah, Adam McKay, he was great. I mean, I didn't spend a lot of time with him, but he was kind of like in Video Village, right out of my eye line. And he goes, and he was just like, say this. Now do it like this. Say it like that. All right, now do it again. Now this time say this and then say that. And he's just throwing lines at you. Now I'm not a super duper improv guy.
Right.
I'm not quick thinking like that. I wish I had been that day because I got there when they were shooting the scene where the doctor, who's played by Wilbur Fitzgerald, was telling Ron that he was blind and what he could do with the rest of his life.
Right.
And so, and then and McKay is like, "Hey, say you could be a mystic. Say that you could travel the country as a sage, you know." And he's like just throwing lines. And Wilbur, God rest him, he's the straight man. He's just keeping the whole thing deadpan and serious, you know. And Will Ferrell's being Will Ferrell, you
Right.
know, like a bull in a china shop.
Yep.
And I'm watching this on the monitor, and I'm just trying not to laugh and ruin the shot
Right.
because I'm just cracking up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh shit, I got to do this now. I don't think I can pull this off. But it went great. He was very kind, very generous, and just it took, you know, they did two angles on me, and it took 20 minutes.
Sure. I was wondering one, how short it was, how like you did it in no time. Second, I've heard the stories about how he will do exactly what you just said, which is just throw stuff out and say, do this. And I was wondering, because it was just one line, if you still had that experience.
Oh yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. But he would say, you know, I think I don't remember what the other lines were,
Yeah.
but it was like, say you're damn straight. Okay, now say amen, brother. You know, and then say
Right.
this and say, you know, wait, say it slowly. Now say it louder. Say, you know, he was just yelling
Wow.
like, just try all kind. Just keep. We're just gonna keep rolling. Just try things.
Now, your audition is a fucking genius idea. And did you do that? Was it total coincidence? Because I'm thinking Adam McKay, who likes variation
That's
and
why I did it.
that's why you did it. You're a
Yeah, I knew.
genius. You're an absolute fucking genius for doing that.
Well, I just
Oh
said,
my
you know, it's
God.
one line. It's Adam McKay. My wife and I love his movies. And they're goofy, and he's like, yeah, they're improv guys. So I'm just gonna give them a whole bunch of different shit.
Wow.
And I didn't get any crap from my agent. I didn't get any crap from casting. And obviously it worked.
That
And they're
was
like, let me hire that guy, because obviously he likes to play.
brilliant. Oh
I'm
my
assuming
God.
that's what. Plus, at the time, I had a big old beard and
Yep.
giant hair, which helped.
Okay. All
Yeah.
right.
Yeah.
That's a good lesson for everybody, for any actor who's out there listening, who's working on
Yeah,
this. That's a
I
great
tell my
idea.
students that story all the time. You know, don't, I mean, don't be blatant about it. Don't be an asshole. But rules are stupid when it comes to auditioning. You know, I get this, you know, things all the time. Like, Jason, you know, you missed a few lines. I'm like, who, your words, you switched some lines. I'm like,
Right.
really? Well, he's the best actor we've seen in months, but damn it, he didn't say the words right.
Right.
Really?
Right.
No, I can't believe that.
I help people with auditions and putting them on tape, and I do some coaching as well. And I do. I have people who do really good stuff, and then all of a sudden they'll stop themselves and go, "Oh, I said this wrong." And I'm like, I will fucking kill you if you stop again."
I'm
Right?
firing
I'm not
you.
gonna
Yeah,
kill
don't
you.
stop.
Yes. Because
Don't.
who cares? What you were doing was great.
Yeah, they've watched this long, they won't care.
Right?
Yeah.
And because you work with other actors and you do some teaching and you have students, what do you talk to them about or what do you say to them? And even for yourself, having done the things that you've done, going back to where we started when I talk about the you may have scenes, the EMTs, the man with knife and head, the doctor
Yeah.
number two, our good buddy, when he was auditioning all the time, he would actually get upset because he would get auditions and he was like, "Man, but it doesn't have a name. It'd be better if he
Oh.
had a name." And and he would actually be
No.
annoyed. So give me your perspective. How
My
do you feel about
perspective on that is that if my name in Anchorman 2 was Stan, you
that?
wouldn't know who I was. I'm man with knife and head. Oh, that guy. You know, I mean, come on. I mean, that's the most obvious example. Yeah, I get it. You know, it feels better to, you know, like on The Walking Dead, if you're going to be on there for like one episode, that you have a name, that sort, that's different. But if it's like, it's an identifiable moniker of like man with knife and head, or, you know, racist gas station attendant, you know, because if it had been like Bob Williams on 42, no one would know which character mine was. It was like white gas station attendant. Oh, that guy. So that's the right title. You know, now if it's episodic television drama and you're just a normal human being, yeah, because they're not going to know who you are anyway. You know, if your name's Bob, and now that's the thing, because usually you're not going to have a name unless you're part of the story. And if you're not
Right.
part of the story, there's no reason for you to have a name. That's my two cents.
There you go. Well, man, I cannot thank you enough for taking the time to sit down and talk with me and getting to know each other. And, you know, now we have this wonderful connection, I feel anyway.
Yeah, no, this is great. I'm sorry that I didn't. I'm going to watch all your stuff now.
No, absolutely. I appreciate that, but you are not obligated to. Man, this is, again, I hope we get a chance to cross paths actually in person again. I certainly
work
hope
together.
That. Yeah, for sure. And at least drink a beer together. I hear you're a big whiskey guy and you play golf.
I do. I suck at playing golf. I haven't played in a while. I had back surgery in 2011. And I've played golf twice since then, but actually it doesn't hurt anymore. So
good.
But I've given up golf because it hurt too much to play. But I can get around the course, you know.
Especially with a nice bottle of whiskey.
Nice bottle of whiskey. Absolutely. Yes, that makes it even better.
We'll see.
But I'm not a connoisseur, but I do like my whiskeys. I'm a rye whiskey fan right now.
Well, hopefully we'll get a chance one time to enjoy both.
That you have lovely.
This has been Jason Warner-Smith on You May Have Seen. Thank you so much for listening.
Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And if you'd like to leave a comment or review, that's always nice. You can also email us at youmayhaveseen@gmail.com if you have a comment or a question, and we'll give you a shout-out in the next episode.